We're in Shmuel Beis, we're in Perek Tes Vav. We're up to Pasuk Yud Gimel. This Perek, as we've seen for the past couple of weeks, discuss the rebellion of Avshalom. We mentioned 2 weeks ago how Avshalom started off very slowly in the rebellion, how he didn't at first just step up and rebel against his father. Ultimately, what he tried to do was to gradually win the hearts of all the people in the Jewish nation. We mentioned how in the beginning of this parak, he woke up early in the morning, and he spoke to the people. He was a man of the people. He asked people where you came from, very simple conversation. Then he started finding out that sometimes they were being judged and they didn't feel that they were represented properly, and said, you know, it's too bad that if I would be the king, I don't necessarily want to be the king, we should know, if I would ever have been the king, then you would have been in good shape. I'd been able to listen to your case, you would have won. And as Pasuk Vav told us, V'ganev Avshalom es lev anshei Yisrael, he stole their hearts. To the point that, as we saw last week, he went to the king, to his father, and he said that he had an obligation to go and to bring offerings in Chevron. And we discussed why he chose Chevron. According to one opinion, it's just for some reason the best animals are found there. The Radak said that he was trying to emulate the ways of his father, and that he originally became recognized as King David in Hebron, and therefore he in turn felt it would be appropriate to start overthrowing his father in Hebron. So he asked for a couple of people to accompany him. Those couple of people turned into a couple hundred people, and as we saw in the Radak, which was in Pasuk Yud Aleph, that he had a blank paper, which was from his father, not blank as far as, and it was blank completely, but it didn't have specific names of who those two people were, so he kept showing it, I need two people, until finally a whole bunch of people came, not knowing what Avshalom was really up to. Now, in Pasuk Yud Beis, we were introduced to a man by the name of Achitofel, who was the Yoetz David. He was the person who was actually gave David advice. Seemingly, you would think Achitofel was a good guy on David's side. As we mentioned, it's very possible, this is how we concluded last week, that Achitofel was really the instigator of this whole thing. There are those that say that all Avshalom wanted to do was to have a little piece of the pie, then he'll be the king in Hebron, and that's it. And we also cited the third paragraph in Tehillim that is a little strange, that it was a Mizmor LeDavid, that he was so happy, he was singing praises to Hashem from running away from his son. And the reason, as we saw, the Gemara mentioned, that it was a good thing, because he knew that he was going to be, there would be a rebellion in his house. He thought it could have been a stranger. So when he found out it was his son, he said, okay, not so bad. His son is not, he's going to have mercy and compassion on him, which of course he didn't. But some explain that Avshalom's intention was not to kill his father. He really did not want to do any of the sort. It was only Achitofel that said, why are you stopping at Hebron? Go for the whole thing. And Achitofel really was not on anyone's side. The only side he was really on was his own. Achitofel was hoping, David is very powerful, Avshalom is a nobody, let Avshalom kill David, and then ultimately I'll be able to overthrow Avshalom, then I'll be the next king. Okay. With that said, let's continue. Pasuk Yud Gimel. V'yavo ha-magid el David lemor. So the speaker, the person who gave information over to the king, to David, said the following bad news. Hayel lev ish Yisrael achrei Avshalom. I'm not sure if you're aware of all of this, but you don't have the respect that you used to have. And in fact, all the people, their hearts are now following of Shalom. Now, you can certainly interpret the Lev as like an emotional thing as opposed to intellectually speaking, because he was trying to hit them on an emotional level to show that he was passionate and he cared about everyone. So now that David heard all this, he realizes that he's in big trouble. Now he has a couple of choices. Choice number one is stop it and nip in the bud and kill Avshalom after he's certainly being mourned by Malchus. He felt he rebelled against the king. He thought that Oriachiti would rebelled against the king for some small little flaws that he had, whatever it may have been. So certainly Avshalom deserves to die, and therefore maybe that's what David's going to do. Let's see. The Yomer David l'chol avadav. So David turns to his servants, Asher Itov Yerushalayim, that were with him in Yerushalayim. Kumu, let's get up. Benivracha, and let us flee. Let's run away. Kilo sielonu pleita mipnei Avshalom, because there will not be pleita. The Mitzvah Sionchik says Hatzalah. There will not be any savior, any remnants among us. How do you translate it?
Salvation.
Mimnei Avshalom, because of Avshalom, he is clearly going to destroy us all. So therefore, we better get out. Maharu, let's be quick. Lelechus, to leave. Pen Yimaher v'hisigonu v'hidiach leinu es hara, because otherwise he'll catch up to us in the hidiach, and he will thrust upon us this evil. Upon us, v'hika ha'ir lefi charev, and he will end up smiting, killing out everyone in the city by the sword.
Can I ask a question? It seems to me then that David had a very weak brain at this point. I mean, if these people can be just influenced to come over to Avshalom just like that, and he has to flee because he's afraid he won't have enough support, was it indeed a weak brain at this time?
It certainly seems that way. Again, it's possible that it was a gradual process. But clearly at this point, you would think that he does not have a whole lot of power. If he had any power, you would think he would have been able to stop this rebellion. Apparently, he was informed that it's a lot more serious than he maybe initially thought it was. So,
he had a poor approval.
The whole thing seems to me like,
right.
It reminds me of something that I did when I was a little girl. I wanted to go to camp, so I told my parents that my girlfriend's parents said it was okay for her to go to that camp. And she went home and she told her parents that my parents said it was okay. And we went and we both went. And then the parents made afterward, we were already there. That we were tricked. And it seems like to me that they're doing the same thing here. Avshalom is going to Hebron, supposedly to Lakriv Korban. And 200 people are going with him to celebrate
Korban, to sacrifice.
The 200 people are going because they think that this is what's happening.
And then
he says, to go send Meraglim to all the other Shvatim. If they hear the shofar blowing, it means that he's king. So the people don't know that this is a ruse. Yes. And David, who's is very insecure at this point, sees that 200 of his people are going with Avshalom and the palace is, and the women are in the palace, and only the people working for him are there. He believes what the Meraglim have told him. And he thinks that he has been betrayed by everybody. And he is not strong at this point, so he just falls out. So the whole thing, it's like when Hebron, when the Israelis came into Hebron, there was no fight. They just took it over. And this is, here there's no fight. Avshalom is taking over the Malchut without any fight.
So the important question is, did you end up going to the camp?
We did.
It worked.
It worked. And
okay.
It worked here too.
And it worked yesterday.
Okay, so if we look in the Radak makes an interesting point. There's two. First of all, the Radak says Kumu v'nivracha. So the Radak starts off saying as follows, which is just a basic explanation that we already saw, and then he comes up with a little far out explanation. Ki'im lo nieh ba'ir. So the Radak says that if we're not in the city, lo yavo el ir. He's not going to come to the city, obviously. He's only in, Avshalom's only interested in killing me and overthrowing me as the king. So if I'm not in the, let's get out of the city, because what will happen? Vim yavo el ir, vim osanu b'ir, lo sielonu pleita mimanu b'yakas ir. Very simple. He felt that he was so concerned about the safety of others that he realized that if he would be in the city, nothing was going to happen to him. He would be safe in his palace with all his guards, but he'll just end up killing a bunch of innocent people. Sounds almost like a little bit of a like a terrorist. We already know that Avshalom burned a field of an innocent person just to get his way. So he doesn't stop at any cause. He doesn't care to get what he wants. So that's how sensitive David was. Even though maybe David could have standed his ground, he could have kept, he probably had still a relatively, he must have had a very strong army and people that could have protected him, and maybe have defeated Avshalom. But he did not want people to get hurt. He felt it would be better for me to run away and to look like I'm just a nobody, run away like I was running away from Shaul, than to have innocent people have to die. That was the great level that David was on. And if we look to the end of this first wide line in the Radak, it says an interesting language, because the Hediach mean, as we said, is that he will thrust evil upon us, which is an unusual language. The Hediach also represents idol worship. The person who is involved in idol worship, in Avodah Zarah. If you look in the Medrash, it says, the Medrash Tehillim, the Hidiach means Shol Yidon Osanu Kiir Hanidachas. Hanidacha, that's the same word, Hidiach and Hanidachas. An ear, Hanidachas, is a city in which the majority of the people in that city are idol worshippers, in which the punishment is that that city is destroyed. The people are killed, they burn up all the possessions in the town square. So what he was saying, v'hidiach aleinu, is that he should not treat the city, Yerushalayim, like an ir nidachas, that he'll just completely destroy everything. And therefore he was concerned not only about the people, of course, but also of the dignity and the kedusha of Yerushalayim, that it shouldn't be downgraded to such a city comparable to that of a city filled with idol worshippers. So that's how the Medrash connects the choice of words v'hidiach, because if he would stay in Yerushalayim, then that's exactly how the city would end up looking, and in fact it was l'fi charev, which is the way that those people in those cities are killed, is through the means of a sword. Okay, pasuk tesvav, v'yomru avdi hamelech el hamelech. So if you were a servant and you heard the king speaking this way, and you knew that there was a more powerful person, maybe you'd say, you know what, I'm going to forsake David, I'm going to go join Avshalom's camp. I'm not going to run around like a fugitive the rest of my life, living in caves, hopefully surviving somehow, going from place to place, like a nomad. I'm not going to be with David. That's not how they felt. Such loyalty they had, the pasuk says, Kechol asher yivchar Adoni hamelech, hini avodecha. Whatever you, the king, decides, behold, avodecha. We are your servant. I'm your servant. I am going to listen to you no matter what it takes, even though you're not even going to be acting like a king. But we will always act as your servants. And that was the loyalty they had. It's not so clear who he's speaking to, how many people. Is it only a few? We're going to see in a few more psukim other people that join him. But it's not so clear, just on the simple reading of the psukim, exactly how many people he was talking to. Okay. Vayetze hamelech v'chol beso baraglov. So what did they do? So everyone got up, and they went with the king. They left. But for some reason, David did something strange. Ve'azov hamelech is eser noshim pilagshim lishmor habayis. So he left 10 women. He didn't leave people from the Marines with Uzis in their hands to protect the house. He decided that the 10 best people to protect the house were 10 concubines.
Isn't it the new king will take the concubine? That's a very important part of becoming a king.
Right. So the question is, so maybe that's the reason why he chose to leave them, as though to persuade him just to stay in Yerushalayim and stay with these pilagshim, with these concubines, so as not to chase after him. So maybe that was some bait, if you will, for him to not bother. Certainly doesn't imply that he would have compromised the safety of these 10 women. After all, he was concerned about the safety of strangers in Yerushalayim, so perhaps you would want to believe that he wasn't going to feel that way any less about these women. And perhaps that was the idea, that Avshalom could just choose to be with them. But Yetzeh HaMelech V'chol Am Baraglav, which is pretty much the same thing we just read in the previous pasuk, that David and all the nation, V'chol Am, see, I don't know what that means, V'chol Am, but it doesn't sound like a few people. The entire nation traveled with him, V'yamdu Beis HaMerchok. And he ended up stopping together with this whole nation in a house which was Rachok, which is a distance far away. Okay. So this is what he chose to do. So what does it mean, Beis HaMerchok? So if we look in the Radak over here, it says, Kolam has to see Makom Shari Rachok Mir Shalayim. It means he was far away from Yerushalayim. So again, he was so concerned about the safety of Yerushalayim that it should remain intact, that he was willing to go with massive amount of people, but just to stay away from Yerushalayim. The next explanation of the Radak, quoting the Medrash Shmuel, says, in the Yalkut, Melamed Shinaduhu, that he was put into Nidui, which is a fancy way of saying he was put into Cherem, he was excommunicated. Yeah, that's what it says. The Medrash says, Melamed Shinaduhu, that he was excommunicated. Melamed Shiparshu Mimenu, it teaches us that he separated himself from them. So, they separated themselves from him. They separated themselves from him. So, again, on one hand, people wanted to show loyalty to him, but at the same time, he was separated from everyone else, and perhaps the reason is he felt that his fate was sealed, that he would be killed, and therefore at least he shouldn't have masses of other people, that they should die along with him. So perhaps the idea of being put into Cherem, of being excommunicated, also was in his best interest to spare other people's lives.
Who does that? But it seems that they separated from him. They made the decision. That's how it looks to me. Well, I mean, Sheparshu Mimenu. They separated from him. They made the decision.
Very funny. And who's the one? Who is the one or the ones who actually excommunicated him? You can't just say, okay, we're excommunicating. It must be some group or
Sheparshu Mimenu.
It's not clear exactly how it's done. It, you know, doesn't mean they wrote a serif on him or something like that. But the idea is that they separated from him. And again, perhaps the idea is not necessarily an absolute excommunication as far as halacha is concerned. David didn't do anything really that all that bad. I mean, he's getting punished over here. But the reality is that he probably had himself separated so as to spare the lives of other people. V'chol avadav, it's not so clear exactly how or why. V'chol avadav oivrim al yado, and all of his servants, which is, this seems a little bit contradictory to what this matter says, that his servants is passed by near him, al yado, they're right by him. V'chol hakresi v'chol aplesi, and all of the crazy and placey, which is translated over here as the archers and all the slingers, which we're going to see another explanation in the Radak in a second. V'chol hagitim and all of the people from Gath, which is really people who are plishtim, thank you. Shesh meos ish, 600, there's your number. Asher bol baraglo, migas, that came from Gath. Orim al pnei hamelach, And they passed, and they were in front of the king. So he was not with a small amount of people. He was actually with a significant amount in number. So if you look in the Radak, the Radak makes another explanation of what is crazy in place. Again, translated here simply as the archers and the slingers that they were with him, which implies that he had protection. He had his bodyguards, he had his posse with him. The Radak says this, the first explanation, Targum Yonasan, V'chol Kasha Sayo, which is a keshet, which is a bow and an archer, V'chol Kalayo, which is, again, the slingers. V'efsher Shahaya Mishpachos Yadu'us B'Yisrael. It's possible to probably say that these were certain families that were knowledgeable in Yisrael about how to defend people. However, the Radak gives another interpretation. Rabbeinu Zal Pirshu Eilu Urim V'Tumim. When it says that it was Kresu Plesi, it's not referring to archers and slingers, but it's referring to the Urim V'Tumim, which was worn by the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. Umilas Kol Kashel Perusha. However, the problem with the word, it says before crazy in place, it says, and all of the crazy in place. There's only one, so you can't say all of them, right? All of one. What does that mean? The Gemara actually, in Brachot, which is how it's quoting, says the reason why the Urim V'Tumim are called crazy in place, because karet means it's cut, and pleti means it's precise and exact. Because when it comes to asking a question and the answer coming from the Urim V'Tumim, where the different lights and the letters which correspond to it, it's very, very clear. The answer is very fast. It's not drawn out. But it's a very precise answer. That's how the Gemara interprets why it's called crazy in place.
There's no Kohen. How can he get it? Shouldn't there be a Kohen with it?
No, we are. Go ahead.
But did you say the Radak says that? Because on page 303, says the Radak
agrees with that. Oh yeah, but the Radak, right? We just read the Radak, but the Radak concluded saying the word kol kashul perusha makes it difficult to explain it this way because the pasuk says all of the creation plays, but there's only one. That's why the Radak cites it from the Gemara, but then says that I don't understand that Talmudic piece. That's what it says. Oh, that's what it says. Kares is cut and placed means distinguished, special. When he says that the Radak disagrees with this, okay.
It says it rather refers to the Sanhedrin, the greatest scholars of the land. Or it could have been the names of two distinguished families of scholars.
Right. Okay. So that's how...
Well, that's what it says here. Are you sure how you and Mishpachot
did work? Right, it's very possible that... So there's different explanations what is Kares in place. It's not very clear. The next Radak says,
can it just be crazy
the archers and the slingers, what? Right? Yeah.
Why do we have to go into such... Well, why is there anybody commenting? There's always
Well, I mean, I guess the reason why is that crazy and placey, which were the English translated as archers and slingers, is not really a simple word for an archer. It should say something with the root of the word keshet in it. So the word crazy is not really the same thing, so maybe that's the reason why they choose.
What does crazy literally mean? It
means cut.
Oh, something to cut out. Right.
But it could be, I guess an arrow has the capacity to cut you open.
And plati, where does that come from?
Again, it means distinguished or special, mufla, okay. Something unique. So it could be that these people are special, talented in this particular warfare.
So in other words, nobody really knows what crazy is.
They're sharpshooters.
Right.
That's what they know.
Yeah, that's right. So they're the top.
He does not act like a king. It's amazing how David is not acting like a king.
He's being protected like a king needs to be protected.
So he's running away.
Oh, he's running away, of course,
he's not
right.
He's not acting, he's reacting.
Correct.
He's running away.
Right. I mean, it's important to realize that how did he not know what was going on until this point?
His son says, my father is not acting anymore.
Right.
And he, and truth
Right. It's what it apparently.
He doesn't know what's going on. He's right. in the palace. He's.
But you know what? We learn. It's cold. He wakes up and he doesn't wake up early in the morning. Like he doesn't. You know, but that's why I'm so crazy. No, but he doesn't get up early in the morning. He sleeps late. He goes out on the roof and he's looking at women.
He's reactive, not proactive, you say. Okay. Radak continues and speaks about this nation of Gath. So the Radak, quoting a Gemara in the Avodah Zarah, said, Amru, ki goyim hoyu, these were non-Jews, b'chein iti hagiti goy hoya. Iti hagiti, which we're going to see, is one individual from Gath, who is going to have a dialogue in a moment with David, was not from the nation of Israel. Why do we need to know that? We're going to see that based on the following upcoming psukim. So let's continue now. We're up to Pasuk Yotes. V'yomer HaMelech el Itai Hagiti. So here is Itai Hagiti, which again is clear based on the Pasuk before that said Migas. It was just talking about people from the Gittites. So therefore, all of a sudden, we're now talking about Itai Hagiti, who obviously came from there. And David asks the question, Lama telech gam ata itanu? Why are you here? Why are you with us? What are you doing? Shuv v'shev im hamelech. Why don't you go back and be im hamelech, together with the king? So what do you mean with the king? He is with the king. So if you look in the English, he puts in brackets the word new. The new king. Why are you with me? Wouldn't it make more sense that you should go to Avshalom? Go with the Melech, go with the king. Which is pretty unbelievable that David is just saying, I'm no longer the king. Avshalom's the king. Which, at least, that sheds light going back to the, as we saw before, that he left the Esther Noshim Pilagshim. That he left the concubines there.
They said he left 10 concubines. He had like 70.
Well,
he had many
still,
more.
Still generous, you know. Ten, you know.
He still had plenty with him.
Yeah, you know, but still an offer. Anyway, so and he left Yerushalayim, I guess, as to say he knew that he was going from Hebron probably right back to Yerushalayim. He's probably going to stay in Yerushalayim. He's going to be the new king. Why are you with me? After all, here we go. Kinachri ata, you are. It's translated here. You are a foreigner. Vegam golo ata lim kaimecha. And also, an exile returned to your place. In other words, his only concern is the safety of others. So there are some people that, because they were loyal to him, he realized that if they would stay in Yerushalayim, if he only ran away, probably Avshalom would kill them, because Avshalom would not trust them because they were so loyal to David. So David understood, when those people said, I am your servant, they really had no choice. They couldn't show any loyalty to Avshalom. Avshalom probably have killed them. So instead, they had to leave. They had to flee with David. But this guy is neutral. This Itai Hagiti, why on earth are you with us? You're going to end up just putting your life in jeopardy, and there's no point in doing so.
It's not their fight.
Yeah, so go back home. Go and show loyalty to the new king. There's no reason for you to start showing loyalty to me. Then all of a sudden, it'll be too late. You'll be stuck. So if you look in Rashi, Kinachriyata, V'yanachnu baruchim me'in seidu amazon. V'yitoch she'ata nachri lo timsa merachmim. Unbelievable explanation. I'm going to try to say this without sounding that we show favoritism in any way. But let's just translate this clearly. Now, David ran away. David was not only a Jewish man, but he was also a very powerful person, at least at one point. He was a king, well-respected. So he said to them, listen, we're running away. We have no tzeda, we have no provisions, we have no Muslim, we have no substance, we have no food. So how do you think I'm going to survive? We're going to go from little village to village. They're going to see me. They're going to remember that I'm a king. And they're going to remember the things maybe I did for them. And therefore, they're going to show rachamim, compassion. They're going to feed me maybe for a day or two. And they say, okay, take some bread and get out of here before a shalom finds out that we supported you. However, because you are a foreigner, they're not going to give you anything. Why are they not going to give you anything? First of all, because they have no relationship with you. And also, as you said, this is not your fight. They're going to look at you and they're going to say, what are you doing here? I could understand David. I have to support him. Because after all, his life is in jeopardy. So what choice does he have? I have to help him out. But why should I help you? You don't have to be running around with David. Go home and take care of yourself while you have a chance. See how I carefully translated that, Rashi? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's really shot.
I think that you don't have to give a guy.
That's what I'm telling. I'm gonna go crazy.
What do you mean? Go ahead. You want to define what you mean?
No, I think there is no obligation halakhically to support a guy. I think it comes into the whole idea.
I'm very
uncomfortable,
you.
But I think that.
Remember, I'm taping this, so word it a little bit better.
Word it is very well.
She's leaving.
This is
so you're insulting people already, yeah.
Supposedly, they took care of David when he was in there.
That God?
He did.
So there's no apparel.
He had a relationship with the pushtim.
Yeah, they hid him.
So they took. That's how I think it. You can explain it, that they had a prior relationship with David, so they're going to take care of him. Because of what he did for them. But if it's a person that they have no connection to, and not only that, but it's someone that could hold their own, so then they're not going to find rachamim. It doesn't say, Rashi doesn't say that there's no, they have no obligation to give. But it's saying that they're not going to feel as obligated to wish to do so. Okay?
The first one's on the list.
So, therefore, that's the reason why he said, why don't you just go? Okay? Let's just see one more pasuk. Tomol bo'echa v'hayom aniyacha imanu l'lechas. Pasukhaf tells us that you just got here yesterday. Shall I displace you today to take flight with us? You're not even part of this whole cause. What exactly are you doing? You're going to go wherever I'm going to go. Do yourself a favor. Do me a favor. Do a true kindness, which you usually use that term for death. But do yourself a chesed emes. Take care. So let's just see this last pasuk. Vayan Itai es hamelech v'yomar. So Itai Agiti maybe have said, you know what? You're right. What the heck am I doing over here? I better get away. No. Chai Hashem. That's how this Nochri speaks, right? He speaks with Hashem's name. V'chei Adoni hamelech, in the life of my master, the king. Not that other king. He's not a king of Shalom. Don't say they go to that king. Im moko abimkom asher yesham Adoni HaMelech im moves im chayim kishom yavdecha. I will go whichever way you go, whether it's for death or if it's to life. That is where I'm going to go with you. Which sounds similar to. It sounds very similar to, right, to with the story of Ruth. So therefore, that he said, I don't care, I'm going to go with you, and we'll continue next time to see how this all unfolds.